In 2016, journalist Bryn Jonathan Butler took a break from covering boxing to spend time at a more rarefied sporting event, the World Chess Championship. The Norwegian grandmaster Magnus Carlsen, whom many consider the greatest chess player of all time, was playing the Russian Sergei Karjakin. It was an intense, grueling, mind-breaking game. Steve Paulson, a longtime sports fan, wanted to know more.
Bryn, you've covered a lot of sports, especially boxing, so chess would seem to be a very different kind of thing to write about. But I'm wondering if you see any parallels between two boxers getting in the ring and two chess grandmasters facing off against each other.
Oh, I saw immense overlap. The intensity of it, I mean, you don't have the physical manifestation of it, but watching these two guys for 5 or 6 hours, only a couple feet away from one another, you'd watch them almost age a decade. It was grueling to watch what they were doing and to know that just one mistake being followed around the world by chess fans. I mean, chess has such an extraordinary audience, hundreds of millions of people. It was really palpable in this sort of death chamber-like setting that the World Chess Championships, where they took place.
You're talking about the 2016 World Championship between Magnus Carlsen and Sergei Karjakin.
That's right, yeah.
What makes this kind of high-level chess match so intense?
You're just looking at, you know, a one-in-a-billion type person in terms of the cast of mind that's required to operate at that kind of level. Like, Magnus Carlsen could play with his back turned to 10 tables of grandmasters and keep it in his head, all of the games being played simultaneously, and just trounce any kind of competition. It seems almost otherworldly, these kind of mental feats. You know, Sergei Karjakin, both of these guys are child prodigies identified extraordinarily young, who then have to submit to this kind of indentured servitude of 10, 12, 14-hour days for many, many years in order to get where they were in 2016.
Well, it raises the question, is this a game or is it a sport?
Yeah, I think it's fair to qualify. I mean, I don't know if I'd go toward all these games, bowling or golf, as sports, but I mean, I think there are many elements where I was responding to it the way I do with other sports. So very quickly, I was internalizing it as a sport.
You've also written about how some of the most famous names in the history of chess, from Bobby Fischer to the current champion, Magnus Carlsen, they haven't just wanted to win. They wanted to crush their opponent. They wanted to destroy their opponent's ego.
I think that that was the biggest takeaway that I had, is just how incredibly sadistic chess players are at the elite level. And I don't think that's exclusive to chess. I find most of the people that I've interviewed who are excelling in any arena of ambition, it requires a kind of sadism that is really frightening. We like to think that virtue is what drives these people to get on top. It's rare. Looking back with Bobby Fischer, a lot of his interviews, him being asked by Dick Cavett, what's the home run in chess? And he said, it's breaking a man's ego, as you mentioned. But I think it goes further than that, because when he went back on Dick Cavett's show after winning the world championship in 1972, he asked if he had that moment, that thrilling moment of crushing a man's ego. And he said, it wasn't quite there because I just didn't feel like he gave up, which suggested to me it's not just murdering your opponent, it's creating enough hopelessness that they commit suicide.
Wow, good God.
Which I just found chilling.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, haven't there been some cases in some pretty high-stakes chess games where someone just cracks? They just can't deal with the pressure.
Absolutely true. There's a historic match where a doctor actually had to stop what was happening to save the life of one of the players. Kasparov was playing against his opponent, and the opponent lost something like 25 pounds over the course of the championship. So they had to sort of recalibrate the rules of how championships are played so it wouldn't just extend in perpetuity. But I mean, it's extraordinarily draining. I think I read one study where chess players can burn about 30 or 35% of their calories just from mental working.
Really? I didn't know that was possible. So what about you? Do you play chess?
I do play chess very hesitantly because I find it tremendously addictive, which was a pretty big theme of this book, is that these were some of the most highly addictive people that I'd ever come across. And I come from a family of several alcoholics and that kind of predisposition. But there's a wonderful chess shop, the Chess Forum here in New York City in Greenwich Village. And the man who owns it said to me, I'm like a bartender to alcoholics, and this is a far more addictive substance than cocaine or alcohol or any other drug I've ever seen. People are throwing away their families. They're throwing away their lives. These are highly educated, highly capable people, and very, very quickly life kind of telescopes into having one purpose, which is that next game of chess.
Wow.
And it's quite something to see.
Well, you write about some famous instances in history where rulers of countries were so engrossed in their games of chess that they had battles, wars on their doorstep, and they kind of ignored them, and ending up in dire situations. You want to tell us about some of those?
I opened the book actually with a couple of famous instances where, going back just over 1,000 years or several hundred years, there was a battle of brothers in what is now Baghdad in that area, and these two caliphs were fighting. And the losing brother, as everything outside of his castle was falling apart, had a much cleaner battle going on in the board. So as the messenger delivered the news that things are not going well, and if they continue to not go well, you're going to lose your head, which he soon did, he just completely disregarded this messenger and just kept trying to finish this chess game, which he was in the lead. And then several hundred years and several hundred miles away in England, you had the first king who was being delivered the news that Oliver Cromwell had been successful, and he was not long for this world, and it was the same kind of thing, just disregarding the news and continuing on with the chessboard. And he loved the game so much that the two objects he brought with him to the scaffolding to be the first English monarch put to death was a chessboard and a Bible. And that chessboard sold a few years ago as the most expensive board ever sold in history, I think, for over $1 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
So why is chess so addictive?
I think it's just such a perfect game. I think it's such an interesting counterpoint to life. If you look at a game like poker, poker is a game of incomplete information. So it has this chaos at its heart, which I think mirrors life in a way that attracts people.
Well, and there's an element of luck, obviously, in poker.
Absolutely.
Whereas there's no luck in chess, right?
I don't know if I would say luck. There can be human fallibility that you take advantage of, but you're right. It's a game of complete information. Unfortunately, it's so vast that after only a handful of moves, you're going into the potential for billions of possibilities. So it's this ocean without a horizon.
So what makes Magnus Carlsen such a great chess player? What qualities of mind does he have? What can he do that even other top players can't do?
I think it was said of Bobby Fischer that he was Achilles without the heel problem. And I think Magnus is very similar. He's just so incredibly methodical. His preparation is just, I don't think the world has ever had anybody with his degree of preparation. In the most recent World Chess Championships, where he struggled against American Fabiano Caruana, once you sped up the time, he was overwhelmingly dominant against Fabiano, while tie after tie happened in sort of the regulation games. So it's interesting that when you speed up the time and it becomes more human and less about preparation, he's even more powerful. It's just really hard to find a weakness in Magnus.
Interesting. What's Magnus Carlsen like as a person? Well, he has a reputation of being a little smug, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. And I interviewed a photographer who had been around him before he was a world champion who said, you know, Magnus is not the most pleasant person to be around. He's a very insular person. There are some YouTube videos that are quite something to watch of him losing games. And it's very interesting to see the body language of him cracking in the context of, oh, I'm trapped. There's nowhere to go. And he starts, his hands and fingers start gesticulating in odd ways to himself, like everything's becoming a blur. But I think what has been required of him to become what he is in such a narrow focus, and that's a really big thing about chess, One of the things that makes it so elusive is us trying to understand what else they're good at because they're exceptional at chess. And it's never been answered in 1,500 years. What else could Magnus Carlsen be doing based on that he's arguably the greatest chess player who ever lived? Nobody knows. And I don't think he knows. And maybe that's something that really might frighten him, as I think it did with Bobby Fischer after winning his title, is what if I lose? Who am I? In my experience interviewing people, I have learned that winning requires no self-awareness whatsoever, which is a big reason why people become obsessed with winning.
Wait, say that again. Winning requires no self-awareness. In other words, self-awareness will get in the way of winning?
Well, I think internality, questioning what you're fighting for, if everything isn't just about winning, it becomes a lot more challenging to become sort of so monomaniacally single-minded. And what I've discovered is people who lose are forced to be confronted with who they are. It almost seems like a zero-sum game culturally. You're a winner or you're a loser, and we have killers and losers and winners and losers. And in chess, I don't think I've ever been amongst a group where status was more paramount.
Bryn Jonathan Butler is a sports writer and author of The Grandmaster.